This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist in the studio with me. How are you today, George?
I'm very good. I can feel my legs now.
What? After the marathon that you ran and didn't train for.
True. And I walked most of the way, but yes, managed to do it on time.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Why didn't you train for it?
The haze. You always blame the haze, right? Okay. Well, now it looks like every evening it's pouring, so nobody can do any training.
There is such a thing called gymnasium.
I'll discover that. Okay. Well, there's other things called, you know, reducing obesity with outdoor activities and that sort of, you know, issues, really.
It is World Obesity Day.
Absolutely.
And, you know, what a better time to talk about obesity given Malaysia and where we are, don't you think?
The number of times you've mentioned that.
I know. I'm tired.
It's numbing to, you know, some people just say, it's a touch of obesity.
You know how I use the same term all the time, but today I'm going to say we've been named the most obese nation in the region.
Do you think we're ashamed of that?
Not at all.
All right. We need to do something about it.
Absolutely. So in the studio with us, joining us also, consultant public health physician and deputy director of the Non-Communicable Disease Section, Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health, Dr. Faisal Idzwan Mustafa. Welcome to the show, Dr. Faisal. How are you today?
Hi, Mira. Hi, George.
Yeah, we're banking our hope on you to save the nation.
Well, we need more people to run marathons like you, I think, George.
Well, the number of years Mira told me that I'm way, way too obese, but finally I managed to downgraded from obesity to overweight. But I've still got a way to go. Yeah.
Really?
That's right. My BMI is still 27.
Yeah, he's done very well, Dr. Faisal, I have to say, over the last few years. Uh-huh. He was obese. Joining us also, Mustafa Kamal Zulkarnain. He's an urban architect. And the reason Mustafa's in the studio with us is also we want to find out in terms of urban planning, how that plays a big role in terms of obesity and how healthy our nation is. And it's interesting because the WHO is talking about it in terms of, you know, WHO is also saying like diet and, you know, activity is great, but urban planning plays a huge role. Like George says, you know, he's putting the blame on everything else.
Mm-hmm. 1,001 excuses not to exercise.
Exactly. There are no parks, not safe, you know, not enough green spaces. The list just goes on and on. Dr. Faisal, do you not hear that all the time?
I think I need to hear about it more. Mm-hmm. Because when you talk about obesity right now, it's easy to blame a person, right? That you're not doing the necessary level of physical activity. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the living environment where a person is living right now, and particularly if you look at the B40 group, and why I single out B40, because as a socioeconomic group, they are more exposed to what I would use the word non-communicable diseases risk factors. They're more likely to be physically inactive, and they are more exposed to NCD risk factors, you can see that they live in an environment that doesn't promote, or you're not incentivized, if I use the word incentivized, to be more active. And we are specifically talking about physical activity today and the living environment.
That's right. And, you know, we've got two categories. One, in the Western nations, they say affluence is related to obesity. They find the more affluent people who seem to be obese. In this country, we have rural and city folk. We've seemed to see an increase in the rural folk as well in terms of obesity. What are your statistics showing you? Are we still the fattest nation in Southeast Asia?
Well, we still have to wait because the most recent survey, the population-based survey, is just been concluded. So we are only doing it every 4 years. So the most often quoted one you will hear is 2015, which shows that about a fifth of Malaysians, adult Malaysians, are obese. And if you look at overweight and obesity, that means BMI 25 and above, that's almost one in two. So one in two Malaysians, both males and females and adults, are obese and overweight. If you mention about rural and urban, the survey do look at rural and urban. Right now, there is a slight difference, but in terms of statistics, it's not statistically different. Why I think this may be so is because Malaysia is fast becoming urbanized. Right now, we are about 70-75% population living in urban areas.
In the cities, yeah.
In the cities.
Mm, almost, yeah.
Right? So, again, we have... Why I think the topic that's been discussed today is relevant in terms of living environment and having a colleague
Mustafa here
to talk about that aspect about the built environment, particularly in the urban areas.
Before we move along to Mustafa about, you know, the future planning, I mean, you said we have to wait for the figures. Are you expecting any improvement compared to 2015 data?
Unfortunately, what we are seeing is not positive. Why I say this, if you recall the recent UNICEF findings of looking at the prevalence of child obesity and child stunting, it's quite high.
Right. So on this data, we have a lot more children data to show that this is the newer generation has even more alarming situation.
They are already exposed to the risk factors. So we would expect, and we know that obese children and stunted children are both at risk of obesity in adulthood and NCDs, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. So I'm not too hopeful in terms of what's the future will hold for us looking at the current situation among our children. I mean, we need to look because their children right now will
be the future
adults.
Generation. Yep. And they're going to be on medication longer than anyone else.
It will be a burden to the society and healthcare. I mean, Mira, the number of times you've mentioned that, you know, we're the fattest nation, and in year after years with these data coming out, do you think this is... having an impact on us changing our lifestyle, you know, in order to improve on this obesity crisis, really?
I mean, based on my observations, I see there's a lot more awareness for sure. I think everybody knows that they need to keep fit and, you know, keep going. There's a lot more awareness among, you see a lot of people now, you know, doing marathons and cycling and you know, the KL has a car-free day, for an example, on a Sunday. There's a lot of initiatives. It is moving.
Yeah, I like the way you put out those sort of initiatives that, you know, your observations. You know, perhaps we can get the Klang Valley listeners to chip into the conversations, whether they actually see there is a shift in our awareness of obesity and what we're doing about it.
Yeah. And do you think, you know, you're doing enough to manage your health, really? Mustafa, you've been working in, you know, urban planning for the longest time. You're an urban architect. What have you seen over the many years that you've been practicing as an urban architect? What's happened? I'm sure you would have seen the population in the Klang Valley growing at super speed. And the world expects 75 to 80% of its population to be living in cities going forward. So eventually, we are going to see those numbers coming into cities. What have you observed?
The population in Malaysia now is shifting towards urbanization, but the lifestyle is still about the same. You wake up about the same time, but now you go to work slightly more earlier. So what happens when you go slightly to work more earlier? You don't have time to go exercise. So then you need to get to your office or to your work or space in the nick of time. What do? You grab the most easiest food. So what's the most easiest food? There's always the mama stores open at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. So it's a diet that also needs to be checked. Whilst for instance, if you're talking about Kuala Lumpur, the DBKL, they are actually working quite hard, putting in a lot of this open space, mini parks, and doing some linkages with new food paths all the way. Because they are actually wanting to have this Kuala Lumpur to become world-class city. So it has to be a walkable city. It has to be more of green linkages. But what do you do?
Where do you think we are in terms of becoming a world-class city? And what does that actually mean?
Well, to be
we have the tallest building.
No, it's not a question of tallest building. It has to be at the people at ground level, at you know, at 4 feet level, what you can touch, what you can feel, what you can actually walk and what you can see, you know. So previously, we cannot even see because there's haze, right? But so
good point.
So now what we are trying to do is we are trying to make sure that we can actually be accessible to all these nice, beautiful parks that they're building. In fact, some have already been built, mm-hmm. but well, more needs to be built as well. But it's not just that built. It has to be accessible very easily. Like, for instance, if you are in the workplace, like here in Taman Ton, right? How far is the nearest park to you?
Hey, right here at our doorstep.
Yeah. Okay, so if you have, what, half an hour, would you go out and do walking or cycling and come back?
Yes, Mira.
So that's... So that
but
that's,
I will perspire.
No,
and I have nowhere to shower after
okay,
that.
So that's...
So I go to the gym upstairs.
Right. So that is the thing. The architects and also the city hall can provide all the spaces in the world, but are we ready to change our lifestyle? Mm-hmm. You see, like for instance myself, I always go for a 2 kilometer walk around my area before I go to shower. So that's every day. So if I don't do it in the morning, later if I come back, I go work early, I come back early, I will do the walk in the evening, but never on the night time, because the night time is actually where the photosynthesis goes the reverse way. Carbon dioxide is in the air. So that is actually another thing that we need to watch too, because I saw a lot of people doing night walking and that's actually very dangerous.
Is it really that bad, Dr. Faisal?
I think I have to disagree on that point. We do know...
Because we don't have many trees anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's
or we cut down many trees.
But, you know, any level of physical activity is better than none.
True. Right?
We need to take the weather into account. I'm more concerned about personal safety, especially for ladies.
Yeah.
If you were to be out at night.
But those are some of the reasons we use for not wanting to go out. Safety, you know.
True, but it's part of the design of the city as well. Is it a proper path, well littered? How confident are you about the security or personal safety? And when we talk about all this, the challenge for us in Ministry of Health is that this falls under the responsibilities of other government ministries and agencies. So that's where the major challenge comes from us. And moving forward, although we have done many programs which is geared towards raising awareness and knowledge, we have to take it now a step further, being able to provide the necessary environment to promote physical activity in this point. And as well, we need to be able to work together with other government agencies. So there are still silos. Yeah. If you look at the documents from Plan Malaysia, for example, you will not see you can't see much specific health-related objectives stated. You will see you want to make a livable city, I often hear. Sometimes I hear about low carbon footprint, fully agree. Mm-hmm. There are health co-benefits with low carbon footprint, but you will hardly see about, you know, improving the health. There's nothing wrong with having health-related objectives by the other ministries. And we had a side conversation earlier. We even not talk about the public transportation that's closely related to a livable city as well.
Correct.
And that comes under the Ministry of Transport.
I'm hearing aspirations. I'm also hearing obstacles and challenges. Mm. So this is just disparity between what we want to aspire to. However, we constantly just come up with excuses after excuses that we're facing obstacles. So where do we go from here?
You still haven't told me how far we are from becoming a world-class city.
World-class city. Yeah, so where do we go? I said, if you have 5 wish lists, your magic wand's going to turn KL into world-class city, what are the 5 areas that you can help to miraculously turn us into a healthy nation?
First of all, it has to be a pedestrian-first city. Mm-hmm. You must make pedestrian friendly. And I think a lot, you see now in Kuala Lumpur, they are actually, or even in Putrajaya, what they're trying to do is actually try to make the footpath as safe as possible, as enough as possible for people to walk by and also to enjoy walking. The most important thing is to enjoy walking.
At the moment, we're not doing too well on pedestrian in the city.
We are getting there in mm-hmm. the sense that some parts of the city has already gone to a level that is actually very nice. But you still need to be watchful over the weather because people always say it's about the temperature, the sun. But that's actually part and parcel of being in the tropical, mm-hmm. and that's actually fine. But you need to be pedestrian friendly in the sense that it has to be both for the physically fit as well as for the disabled people.
True.
So that's where we need to be handsomely providing places and spaces for them. You know, mothers with kids, with the push trolley, the elderly with their wheelchair. It has to be that. And furthermore, you have to create place, not just walking. The walking must lead to somewhere, from somewhere to somewhere. So it has to be a thoroughfare that's actually leading you somewhere. So for instance, if you're coming in from the MRT station, where do you go? Okay, it cannot just stop abruptly there. So it has to go where? To a shop, to your place of work. Okay, along the way, where do you see what you do? So it has to be a path that you actually do. That's why in advanced country, like for instance in Japan or in Korea, you know, when you go to work, you know along the route, there's always something that you can see, you can do, you can eat, but it is actually along the way and it doesn't have to divert. And that's creating people to walk. Mm-hmm. You don't need to use the car. At the very least, you use the car if it's too far for you to go to the station, yeah, whatever.
That's what I was reading. I mean, it becomes healthy. It also regenerates the place, the path in which you use, right? Yeah.
And furthermore now, like for instance, a few years ago, just before MRT is completed, right? We asked the Ministry of Transport, are we ready for even have a bicycle ports there, you know, so that people don't need to use cars or taxis at the last mile or the first mile. They mm-hmm. can take the bicycle and put it out in another station so that it's actually like a rent to use and they can port it there in another place. So they call it bike exchange, something like that. It used to be here, but I think that disappeared, right? Because there's so many things, some inside the bushes.
Absolutely.
You know. So, but one thing,
that's just not in Malaysia. Yeah. I was reading, you find a lot of it. Mm-hmm. They had a problem in the Swan River in Melbourne as well.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, conveniently take from path, walking path to presumably cycling path, right? Yes. So how are we doing on that? Because there were at some stage that KL had these, was it blue pathways that was? Blue lane specific for that. Is it functioning at the moment?
At the moment, it's functioning not too well, but it has started. But there were comments, and I think they're going to improve it further. This bicycle lane is, it has to be also like what you were walking. It has to go somewhere. It cannot just be, you know.
Because it seems to be just invaded into the human pedestrians' walkways. It's like that's almost like, you know, calling for troubles because, you know, bike accidents going to happen between pedestrians and the cyclists.
Yeah, you mentioned pedestrian first. Yes. What are the other four?
Okay, the other one, you have to be more conducive for people to actually stay on the footpath so that they can actually start chatting or start doing some work in the park. And then they can even exercising also along the park. That means to say that they can actually decide to actually go to somewhere in the park. And these are actually routes that go together from the place of transportation to the place of work. Mm-hmm. And another thing about world class is vehicles come second. Right now, it's vehicle-first city. So that means to say that everything's about the car park size, everything's about how well the car can maneuver. And then the last thing is about how well that we actually welcome people in the various public spaces. Like, for instance, if you go to Terminus, right? Do you know where to go after that? Is the signage enough for us to actually do on our own that we can go and take the public transport with very minimal disturbances? You know,
that's a great point. And I think this is time to invite the listeners to join in the conversation to see how we're doing on that.
The question is, are we ready to change our lifestyle? What do you think? And, you know, how else do you think we can make our living space better? That's coming up next. If you have a question, it's 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. Joining us also, Dr. Faizul Izzuan Mustafa, a consultant public health physician and deputy director of the Non-Communicable Disease Section, Disease Control Division, Ministry of Health. That's a very long title, Dr. Faizul.
Thank you very much for indulging me,
Mira. I have to. Also, Mustafa Kamal Zulkarnain, an urban architect in the studio. We're trying to figure out this World Obesity Day, how our living space affects obesity. We always blame diet and, you know, the lack of physical activity. Dr. Faizul, what do you think? I mean, diet is without a doubt. I mean, we indulge too much in food. What are we going to do about that?
All right. Mama's store, especially.
You can't outrun a bad diet. So that means if you talk about obesity, you can't separate the two. But in terms of the diet component, that's very important. And if I could bring it back again to the discussion about the built environment, that is, I mean, your choices of the diet, the food that you take, is also very strongly influenced by your built environment. Yes. If I bring the discussion back again to the B40, if you look at their living environment and what kind of food they are being exposed to, I use the word being exposed to, basically what being the food are being sold or easily accessible to them, I mean, I don't need to describe it. You raised earlier about seeing more people be more active. I agree. There are more and more events, I think, on any given weekend. But we need to look further. Who are the people who are actually joining these kind of events? Mm. Right. Which introduces the concept of equity. So our interventions, is it targeting the right people? Because right now, I see it mostly being a blanket. We need to be more aware that different segments of the population have deserve more focus, more intention, more intervention, and it has to be more specified and more customized for that particular community.
Okay, I get what you mean. What you're saying is now all these marathons and trackers and all of that are all of the
people are already healthy. Yeah. We need to focus on people who are actually aware.
I don't want to be very generalized, but it's the atas people who, like George, who have the capacity. So how will you?
All right,
right. I'm very blunt like that. Okay, you know, I had to use you as an example, George. Come on. how else can we target the right segment? So if we are already preaching, we're in a way preaching to the converted. If you think about the PFM listener as well, we're in a way preaching to the converted. So how can we touch other segments of society? What are some of the suggestions?
I wish I have an easy answer for that. Changing behaviours is never easy. And this, when we talk about changing behaviour here, I'm not even talking about changing behaviour of individuals, even changing behaviour of organisations. I had another side discussion with Mustafa earlier. So we talk about there are various guidelines, strategies. On paper, it looks fine. Yeah. We have the framework in place. But implementation. So how do you convince organizations or leaders of the organizations for my agenda, for example, the non-communicable disease agenda, that they should focus more, they should take more responsibility for changing the environment? Saying that, I'm not dismissing the importance of Malaysians to change their mindset in terms of how important is health, investing in health. We discussed earlier, does it matter for Malaysians that we are the fattest country? Mm. I don't think people, you know, it doesn't move you.
It doesn't scare people anymore.
It's just a statistic.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if I say we do know that we have the highest prevalence of diabetes, which is one of the risk factors in obesity, risk factor for diabetes, we have the highest risk, the highest prevalence among the Asian countries.
I mean, it comes along with diabetes, with obesity. Yeah.
But does it move people? So I really do not know the answer in terms of understanding behavior, and until and unless we know the causes, of course, I don't think we can design a good intervention, because right now a lot of interventions are based on you're not aware and you have poor knowledge, you don't know and you're not aware. But even when you're aware and you have the knowledge, doesn't mean that you would change behavior. Yes. So you would need both raising awareness and knowledge. At the same time, you need the built environment. That's why I was glad I met Mustafa at a conference earlier. It was a public health conference, and we decided to involve urban planners because we realized we want to acknowledge the importance of involving urban planners for public health agenda. So we need more partners for this.
In fact, when I met Doctor, that was in Penang actually, the topic is very encompassing. You know, healthy cities through good governance and good urban design. Mm. So, in fact, this upcoming week also there will be this Asia Pacific Urban Forum in Penang again. We're going to talk about this, but we are going to talk it in much more detail. And the issue is this. The way that we got to think is we got to lure people that your 20 minutes that you do your either physical exercise or physical motions.
Activity.
To make your sweat come out, because I think that's what they want, right? Every 3 times a week, something like that. So if the park, you need to drive to the park, that will actually pull people away to the park. Yeah. So what we need to do is we need to bring the park. Like, for instance, you bring the mountain to the Muhammad or something like that. Yeah. But we have to make it in small bites. So there was this project that I did in Shah Alam, place called Dana Alam. Well, the developer said that, okay, we have done Bukit Jelutong, right? So we got a big park there with all these soccer fields. Then
Elmina.
No, Elmina is after. Bukit Jelutong is first. So, yes, you got a big park, I told the developer. But you know what happened? Everybody drives to the park. They need to park the car there. And there's a lot of all those sort of things. Yeah, you can see things. But I think we need to change. Why you need to change? Yeah, the place of home is supposed to be conducive for you. So it has to be a walkable. And remember, I talked to you, it has to be a walkable, not just in the city, it has to be starting from home. Mm-hmm. So what we did was try to make the parks accessible within 200 meters from their house. That is the most walkable that you can ever have in a housing estate. So, local authorities require you 10% open space over a certain area of development, right? So we had 1,000 acres, you need 100 acre open space. They wanted open space as big as Dataran Merdeka so that they can place all the park there. I said, no, this is a house. It's not a city. So it has to be conducive for people. So I go back to the system of kampung in Malaysia. Mm-hmm. What's kampung? Kampung everywhere around you is actually open space. Mm-hmm. Everywhere is walkable. Even you have a car road, people, when they go to the mosque or to the surah or the shops, they don't use the road. They use the space in between the houses, right? So that's where it started off. And the alarm came in from there. So you can walk front or back, go to the school, go to the shops, or go to your place of worship, all by walking.
That explains why they don't have walls or fences.
Yes.
I always wondered why in Dana Alam.
You know, everybody can observe whenever you're walking, right?
Okay. But defense of the people in Bukit Jelutong, I have to say, they're very good with their exercise and walking. So, well done. Were you involved in that?
No,
stuff?
I was involved in Dana Alam.
Yeah. Okay. The people of Bukit Jelutong are very active. They've got good paths for them to walk and all of that. But, you know, is it too late to rejuvenate what we already have? PJ, for an example.
Nothing's too late. You have to start. So, and I think the way to start is we start by convincing in that manner. So I managed to convince the local authority to do that. And now what happened? It now become a trademark that they followed on to Elmina, they followed on to the rest. So it's now become like a linear part that connects to somewhere. So coming back to Kuala Lumpur.
But that's like Timbuktu. Because I know I live in that area.
No.
And it's new developments, which you can actually...
No, if you can do on a new development, this is the issue. We always say no to whatever we want to do. We should say, yes, we want to do. How can we do it? that's the positive
thing. On that note, I mean, Dr. Faizer earlier on highlighted that he has no idea how to convince the B40 who really need to change their attitude, who really needs to be more aware or mindful of what they put in their mouth and then sweat it out, like you said. So how do we have that attitude to say, can-do attitude, to say we can influence that group with the urban planning?
Okay. We also found out that we already a baggage. Our generation is already a baggage. We
are you describing the whole generation?
I was just trying to
disassociate myself. I'm looking at my tummy and I agree with you. Okay. Yes.
So
Faizal and I are not in that category.
Right.
I'm sorry.
We need to teach through education. And education is the only way now to actually kids start teaching the kids at school. And that's where we are going down. We are actually teaching appreciation of architecture and appreciation of urban design to schools. And we started it about a few years ago under this this month we are having the school design in Kuala Lumpur. We went to the high school and the ideas are amazing that come from them because they're given the opportunity to actually tell what they want. So it's the education. So that means if we give them a good education, they will give us back that good feedback and they will spread the good news.
So what you're saying, that's future with the younger generation?
Correct. There is future.
In terms of awareness and all of that?
Awareness and also action. You know, the kind of diets they go, no, there are people talking about me that, you know, vegetables, be careful. Not all vegetables are vegetables, okay?
Potatoes ain't vegetables.
No, the stems are actually carbohydrates, but the vegetable is a vegetable. So, wow, so sort of dialogue are coming into me now. So, it's
you know, but Dr. Faizal is saying something else. Our children are getting fatter.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you look at the root causes of causes, one of the key things we have identified is parenting skills. So schools aside, the children have to go back to a home. So whatever we teach, children learn by what they see, not by what they hear. So parents play a very important role model. I mean, otherwise, for example, I can't explain high rates of stunting in Putrajaya, for example. I mean, these are more educated population. Putrajaya is a slightly skewed population. It's not a typical Malaysian city.
But that is a...
The fattest state in
City in Southeast Asia.
Fattest adults.
And in Putrajaya specifically.
Yeah, Putrajaya, correct. And stunting among children. So parenting skills. So it's not just about simply the environment, but how good you are as parents. So again, if you want to change the parenting skills, you have to start from young again. Is our education system prepared for that? Because I'm not just talking about, you know, so that our children know how to eat right, be physically active, to know about, you know, sexual related issues. So many issues nowadays for children. Yeah. So that, I think, would require transformation of our education system. And we're not going to talk about that today. Yes. That's opening another kettle of fish. However, if you were to be able to improve our parenting skills, that I think our next generation would have a chance, not just about the issue of obesity. We are faced with various issues, mental health, for example. And that's linked to obesity as well. I have not mentioned it earlier, but let's not forget, there is the mental health component behind your behavior, motivation to change, stress, anxiety, that does stuff to your body in terms of biology, but that also affects your emotion and that affects your behavior.
It just has a knock-on effect on everything. Mustafa,
yes.
I would have thought Putrajaya, and I think Putrajaya has been very well planned. They have huge roads, broad.
And it's quite atas. And why would we have obesity issues?
Yeah. Putrajaya is an excellent place to cycle, to run, to
roll.
Yeah, I mean, you should direct it to me because I work there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And why would that be the case?
Every land has got its capacity, right? No, when you get so big, what happens? Your distances gets further away. So that's the reason why this new urban agenda that comes in, right, ever since 2016, they are promoting compactity. Compactity. That means to say that things are much closer to us. So the guidelines of designing urban, where your setbacks are, where your road width, it has to actually change to suit. Because right now, because the car ownership is too easy, we get more cars, right? But if you look the trends outside there, where the millennium, they don't want cars. They would rather go for public transportation. Because it's easier for them to upload and download, because they can easily change of place and also place of stay. So we need to ensure that the distances and sizes are actually of certain sizes that is actually palatable. No, once you get too far, I need to drive. That's
That is a deterrent, yes, is what you're saying. You can't please them, lah.
Yeah, it's sometimes.
What are we gonna do?
It's too big. It's too small.
Yeah.
It's
like,
yeah.
I think Putrajaya is a perfect example when even when you provide the right environment, if you don't have the right mindset, you won't use it. Yep. So you need both.
It's a perfect example.
It's a perfect example.
And you know, being the biggest, having obese and overweight, people in a city known to be in Southeast Asia, I think is not terribly the nicest thing. But anyway, we'll come back and find out more. What do you think? Are we ready to change our lifestyle? Give us a call, 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon and welcome back. It's our Doctor in the House series. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist in the studio with me. Dr. Faisal Izzuan Mustafa from the Ministry of Health. I'm going to cut that short. And Mustafa Kamal Zulkarnain, who's an urban architect. We're discussing our obesity and our built environment, our urban environment, and how much of that plays a role in our obesity rates. Well, at the moment, we have both sides of the story. We have given that space and Malaysians are still not making use of it. At the same time, Mustafa is telling us we should become more compact to make it easier, easily accessible, so we don't have to drive to a park or we don't have to drive to anywhere else. But it's interesting that we have just to look at the budget, because just for your information, the top three budget figures for 2020, Ministry of Education has got 64.1 billion, Ministry of Finance 37.8 billion, and the Ministry of Health 30.6 billion. And just the three of that make up 44.6% of the budget. That's
so last year's allocation was
29 billion allocation. So it's only just like what? 1 billion more?
So is it just saying 1 billion? Mira, you're just saying like 1 billion.
That's kind of almost in keeping with inflation, right?
Ministry of Education, 64.1. That's more than double. You got a 1 billion increase. Do you think you can do much with that?
Even at the moment, if you look at the number of patients, so let's just talk about patients, yeah? You know, attending public health facilities. That means public hospitals, public health clinics. More and more people are coming. Mm. Even we have data to show that even if you are from the higher quartile of the income, quite a huge proportion do come to public hospitals and public clinics. We are looking at increasing prevalence of non-communicable diseases, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. We are fast becoming an aging population. That doesn't look well in terms of the burden for the healthcare system. And the big chunk of the budget will go on the health service delivery. I'm not saying it's not important. It is important.
Yes. But not enough.
But we need to be able to invest more in the preventive side.
Indeed. Yeah, because, you know, we can't just carry on dealing with health service delivery for non-communicable diseases, but the preventive is the key in order to reduce that number exploding, right?
Yes, it is. Just to come back, pull back the conversation, there's been a lot of conversation around public transport the past few days. Our economist, Professor Jomo Kwame Sundram, he's saying that the government should subsidise public transport instead of fuel. What's your take on that, Mustafa?
Well, I agree to that because, you see...
But we have a national car. How are we going to... Well, How are we going to do that juggling? You
know, okay.
We have to have focus. Okay, the most important thing now we want to do, we have to have a focus. Yes, we have a natural car. But if that natural car, it has to be of a certain level of natural car, which is actually more important than what it used to be. Okay, we have a MRT, LRT, and some are very privileged to have a BRT. Mm-hmm. See, you look at the cost of transportation. I was talking to the doctor just now. A liter of petrol costs 2 ringgit, just for argument's sake, right? How far does it take for you for a 2 ringgit ticket on the MRT? 4 stations at the most, mm-hmm. right? Okay. But a 2 ringgit, a car could go, what, 18 kilometers per liter? How many persons I can carry? Mm-hmm. 4 or 5 persons? Okay. If I were to get from TTDI to KLCC, that's about the distance of 9 kilometers. I can come back here. So that's 2 ringgit for you with 5 people, right? So the transportation cost is 2 ringgit. I don't have to pay going cost because there's no first mile, there's no last mile. You only pay the car parking ticket. But mm-hmm. you look at the MRT ticket from TTDI to go to KLCC, a person maybe 4 ringgit because you go beyond that 5 number stations. Times by 5 is 20 ringgit. So you are actually more on your transportation cost.
You're better off in the car.
Then from MRT to KLCC, there's no MRT station yet, right? You got to go another transportation, take another LRT to Putra Line and come to K. So that's cost another cost. So in total up, maybe it's about 50 ringgit. So the balance, the difference between that 50 ringgit and that 2 ringgit, almost what, 40 ringgit? I could buy a good lunch for all those 5 people somewhere. So where is actually the equity or the balance between public transportation? That's the reason I did point out in one of the transportation forum to Ministry of Transport, to SBAD at that time, and also to even the KVMRT. If even though now they have the 100 ringgit thing, but that's only for a person. We need to think public transportation is for a nation. You know, there was an argument, they say it's only for the working people. I say, what? So you cannot do, you cannot find an answer just for an answer. We have to be in totality. There are a few countries that goes public transportation free of charge, so that people go on their public transport.
Oh, I think that would be great, actually.
That's a great subsidy. You know?
You remember when it was 170717? That was the day, I think, when MRT was first launched, right?
You're very good with numbers, I have to say. I can't remember a thing, actually.
No, what happened was the toll at Jalan Duta was cut down to half of the vehicle because MRT from Sungai Buloh goes to
Kajang
and Bukit Bintang. You can take us from Bukit Bintang to go and take satay in Kajang very easily, just go MRT.
Absolutely.
Right?
You just cross the road from the station and you have satay Kajang.
So what I'm trying to say is you can cut the traffic by half just because you put a 50% off your transportation. Imagine you put another 50% off that 50%. Mm-hmm. Everybody will just go on public transportation because I don't have to think about any other thing.
Then KL will be a world-class city.
It will.
That's right.
Provided we think about the pedestrians and we have conducive for people to stay on the footpath. You know, I have a problem with gaping manholes on our footpath. Suddenly out of the blue, it's right there, open for you to fall in. You need to exercise along that path. It must be conducive for that. Vehicles come first, did you say?
No, pedestrians come first.
Vehicles second. And how to welcome people into the public spaces with signages and all of that. You wanted to add on.
Yeah, let's not forget the health co-benefit of being physically active by walking. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if you've been to a meeting in a developed country and suddenly if you do use a pedometer, it's so easy to hit 10,000 steps. So what we call non-exercise physical activity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas on a normal day, I would hardly hit 4,000 steps in Malaysia because I drive, park. Whereas if I go for a meeting, even in Singapore, it's so easy to use the public transport and you get the health co-benefit of walking. And there is a lot of research actually that looks into a relationship between built environment, especially on the physical activity component because it's the most easiest to measure. And even talking about green spaces, not in Malaysia. So in places in urban areas where there are green spaces, it doesn't have to be big.
Yeah.
In terms of the health indices, in terms of quality of life, perceived quality of life of that local community population is much higher, having an open green space compared to a place where there isn't any open green. So it doesn't have to be a big park. And no. I relate fully, you know, I have to drive to go to the park.
Yeah.
It you know, it sort of, in a way, defeats the purpose, in a way, and puts you off. You have to drive, face a jam to get to the park. But having even small spaces, and I just like, I was reminded, you know, you have like a think tank like Think City.
Think City.
Right. And they had certain initiatives to make, to, what's the term? It's to activate the space, to make any available space in an urban area to be, you know, to hang out.
To regenerate.
To regenerate and for people to hang out. And it has multiple co-benefits. You'll be physically active, you have your mental health issues, being able to interact with local communities. I could see a lot of things can be done even within limited spaces, as in KL, as you were challenging Mustafa right now, earlier, in terms of, you know, we're talking about KL. But actually, if you go out on a high building, I'm still surprised to see, you can see still green
patches.
Hopefully not disappearing too quickly.
Hopefully not disappearing too quickly.
Because, I mean, the KLCC park is lovely.
Half of it's gone at the moment.
Really?
Yeah, it's been it's been
the
built.
The TTRX has a big park there.
You see, as I said just now, right, if you have small parks, we got to think of how to connect them so that people will walk from that park to another park in order for you. Just imagine you have another meeting in another place, right, from Bukit Bintang to TRX. If you get a nice park, you would walk to the meeting rather than take a cab to the meeting. Then while you're walking, you know, like for instance, when you go overseas, you go for a meeting. When I went to a meeting in London, they were saying, okay, walk with me. I'll discuss with you over before we reach the meeting. Right. Because there's conducive walk path, tree-lined parks. And that's what KL is doing now, but needs to be connected. Mm-hmm. They because everything takes time. And the movement towards that world class is going there, okay? It's going there. So the parks are built now. They need to connect it, and now that's why you have Jalan Tunku Ramban to be only a certain lane width, because they're encouraging people to walk, and that's more important because the shops goes on the footpath count rather than on the car driving fun. That's very important. If retail works on foot count, they don't go on cars. And the slower the car, the more time they can see. That's why in city centres, in London, the travel time in London, the speed is only, 8 kilometres or 18 kilometres per hour? As opposed to us, it's actually about 25 to 35 kilometres per hour. So it's still like a racing circuit in KL. So we need to slow it down. So once it's slower, then people say, it's too slow, I better walk,
right,
or I better cycle. So that's where the build-up to that grand finale where we become one of the world-class cities that is pedestrian-friendly, cyclist-friendly, and cars are there, but it's only for a purpose to get a longer distance.
Do you not think that, you know, Dataran Merdeka is lovely? People hang out there. They've got the River of Life thing going and all of that. Do you think, are you proud of that? I mean, I am, because I see a lot of people hanging out there. It's nice. They have the KL Car Free Day. It's like a carnival. It's really quite nice.
It's nice. Now we need to think as what dogs.
But then there are food trucks, which I'm not sure whether is the best idea.
Serving bubble tea.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to go there now?
With 24 teaspoons of sugar.
At the end of the day, we must make sure that the city works as a working and also living. So it has to go from a destination to a destination. Then things will work. That's why last time, you always see glass of shopping malls, right? They're all internalized. Yeah. Right now, what you see is a lot of those glass walls are broken up because they want to have street fronts.
Yeah.
Because pedestrians now are actually walking. They are much more wanting to walk rather than to actually be in the shopping mall.
Absolutely. Dr. Faisal, your parting words. Do you think it's fair to blame cities for poor health?
Firstly, my message is that Malaysians must change their mindset. They need to realise that we Malaysians are becoming more unhealthy as a population. And unless and until we invest in health, invest the time, invest the resources to change our behaviour, then the outcome doesn't look too good for us. Government has a responsibility. But we must try to now work together across different agencies and ministries, particularly in creating a health-promoting environment.
George?
Well, it's a very simple message. If atas or not, Dr. George can change his mindset and actually go from obesity down to overweight, I think everyone can do it.
I think so too. I just wish more buildings and offices will have showers so we can all shower and go to work. That would encourage a lot more people to cycle and all of that. I think that's a huge deterrent given our climate. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us today. Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Dr. Faisal Izwan Mustafa from the Ministry of Health, and Mustafa Kamal Zulkarnain, who's an urban architect on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.